Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
Weird Creature in the Ladakhi Mountains by M. A couple of things to preface. This encounter took place when I was 10. I'm now an adult, so the details are a bit fuzzy. One other thing, I don't inherently believe in the supernatural. I grew up in a mainly atheist family, so I consider myself reasonable when it comes to otherworldly things. On one trip to India, my family and I went up to North Kashmir and Ladakh. We wanted to visit family. If you don't know, Ladakh is a region of India, way up in the north, and has disputed borders with China and Tibet. All in all, it's a pretty remote and isolated area. We were staying in a rather rural area at the top of a mountain, looking out onto forest mountainsides in most directions. It was gorgeous, no light pollution or traffic, just nature and us. The first couple of nights I slept amazingly, probably the best sleep I've ever had, or will have. So we're about half a week into the trip, and it was nighttime, maybe 12 or 1 a.m. My sister and I stayed up exploring with my dad. By the time my sister had settled down, it was just my dad and me. We weren't tired yet, so he asked if I wanted to stargaze. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with space. The constellations, black holes, dark matter, I loved it all. Growing up in the city with light pollution everywhere, chances to stargaze were slim to none. So I jumped at this chance. I didn't really want to go anywhere outside our safe, lit area, but nothing was going to stop me from seeing those stars, even if I felt a little off about it. We had to walk a couple of yards away from the house because even the light there could hinder us from seeing the full extent of the night sky. A little to the left of the house, there was this opening. Remember, I'm on top of a low mountain, so the opening was literally a path that led off a cliff with shrubs on either side. This was the perfect spot to stargaze because as you reached the end of the path, there were no trees to obstruct your view, and the plants on either side nicely block out any light from behind. So, of course, that's where we went. It was dead silent. No wind, no crickets, which was very weird. We just heard the gravel crunching under me and my dad's feet. I was too engrossed in counting all of the constellations that I could recognize to notice the silence that had fallen over us. At this point, we were both about a yard and a half away from the actual drop-off, and we didn't go any closer for safety reasons. The next part, I remember so vividly, without a doubt. My dad had his flashlight on so that we could watch our step as we got closer to the edge, and out of the dead quiet silence, there was this rustling noise in the brush just off to our right. We both stopped. My dad turned his flashlight towards this bush, and this dog thing peeked its head through. Now, I say dog with a question mark because that's what my child brain immediately defaulted to when I saw this creature. However, it looked off. Its face was so insanely human-like. These eyes, they bore into my soul. You know that reflection animals get in their eyes when the light hits them a certain way? This creature didn't have that. Just two pits of matte darkness. I got this weird chill up my spine, like one of us wasn't supposed to be there. Whether it was my dad or me or this creature, I don't know. Now, I've been to India a lot, and the cities have a lot of stray dogs everywhere. I love animals, probably as much as I love space, so I would pet and feed everyone that I could. Yes, I know you're not supposed to do that, but I was a kid. In my childish, animal-loving mind, this creature was a dog that could be pet like any other one. I ignored that gut feeling, and I told myself I was feeling weird because of the lack of oxygen and the altitude. So I reached my hand out as if to pet it, and it moved a little further forward. That was when I could tell that this dog was a really weird dog, if it was even a dog. Its proportions were off. The joints in its legs were higher than they should have been. The neck was too long and its fur was slick, so slick that it looked like it could have been some kind of fuzzy skin. I remember my dad grasping my shoulder firmly, an obvious command to not move, and he whispered, "Stop." I thought he was just being overly protective, not letting me pet a wild dog that could possibly have rabies, so I turned to say something, but I stopped when I saw the look on his face. It was pale and ashen. He was uneasy, almost scared. I had never seen him look like that, and that was when I got freaked out. "Don't pet that thing," he said. I slowly turned back to it, and every hair on my body stood up. I watched it retreat a little further into the bushes. Its eyes never left mine. That's the part I remember so vividly. It never broke eye contact with me. Its eyes didn't flit around like a cornered or aggressive animal. Even humans don't hold eye contact the way that thing stared at me. My dad turned off the flashlight, maybe to use it as a weapon, I'm not sure. But just as the light went out, the thing vanished. It backed into the bushes and didn't make a sound. We didn't even hear the leaves rustle. I don't know how long we stood there. We expected it to come lunging out or slink around to the other side of the bushes, but it never did. Here's another weird thing. There was nowhere for it to go. As I said, we were on top of a mountain, a low one, but still very steep. My dad and I were at the edge of a drop-off with no way up or down in that area. On either side of the path were those low bushes that I talked about. Beyond those bushes were more houses. Unless that thing dug a hole under the bushes or somehow made its way down that steep drop without making a single sound, I have no idea where it could have gone. There's more context to this story, where I think the creature first found me, but I thought the story was getting a bit long, so I cut it off. However, some people have asked for context regarding some of these events, so let me elaborate. The day before I saw this creature, we decided to go on a hike in the Himalayan mountain range. The sky was clear, visibility was great, and it wasn't deathly cold outside since it was summer. The first part of the hike was great. We had beautiful views and breathtaking nature. I remember we reached the flat area of the trail where it started to get cloudy. Some of us wanted to head back, but we decided to push on. Only a couple of minutes later, it started raining. Cold, icy, hard bits of rain. We realized it was hail. We all ran for cover as this hail grew in size. I was always the runt in the group, small and scrawny, so I wedged myself under this massive rock. It was almost like a shallow cave. I could see everyone running for cover, but the mouth of the opening was shaped in a way that had this overhang where no one could really see me. It felt like we waited there forever, when in reality it was probably only a couple of minutes. But while I was wedged into that crack, I realized it was completely dry, which was strange because the wind was so strong, it definitely would have blown the rain and the hail into the opening. I had this weird, sinking gut feeling, like when you know you've messed up, and all of the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. I was frozen. I originally thought that the crack was so low that nothing could fit in there, and it took me a moment to realize the hole went a lot further back into the rock than I had thought. Something else had been sitting there moments before I crammed my way in. I didn't care that it was still hailing. I scrambled out, and I didn't look back. Everyone was surprised to see me. They had all lost sight of me and didn't know where I was. It was still hailing, yes, but I wanted to get the hell out of there. I rounded everyone up, being as stubborn as I was, and I forced us to run back down the trail. Luckily, by then, the hail had let up. Though I normally couldn't keep my mouth shut, I decided to tell nobody about what happened in that hole. I knew I would just get scolded. I felt off for the rest of the day and tried to enjoy nature around me with my family, but I felt weirdly sick. I chalked it up to the altitude, and I just went on with the trip. That was the night that the encounter happened. Is it related? Maybe, I'm not sure. But I think I disturbed something when I hid under that rock.
The Corner in My Room by Denise. I've been meaning to write this one in. Last episode, you guys told the story about a dog alerting to something. So now here's my story about a dog. Last year, I was dog sitting for my neighbor Paul. We live in a small apartment complex with two levels. He has a beagle named Ruckt, short for destruction, but he's the best. Paul was going out of town for the night and asked me to watch him, and I was happy to. To cut to the point of the story, Ruckt woke me up at around 2 a.m. He was just standing on my bed, completely still, staring at the corner of my room by my closet. Ears up, tail straight out. I've never seen a beagle hold still that long in my life. I looked at the corner but didn't see anything. I turned the lamp on, still nothing. Ruckt relaxed the second the light came on, shook himself off and laid back down. I figured, dog stuff, and turned the lamp off. But then at 4 o'clock, he did it again. Same corner, same stillness. But this time, when I put my hand on him, his whole body was vibrating. Almost like he was shivering cold. I turned on the lamp and moved us to the couch, and nothing else happened after that. In the morning, as I was getting ready, and I know how this sounds, I felt like that corner was darker than the rest of my room. Not dramatically like a movie or something, just like the light was landing on it wrong somehow. I stood there looking at it for probably 30 seconds. Before I decided I was tired or just being stupid. I called Paul to tell him what Ruckt did. He went quiet for a second, and then said, kind of carefully, "Yeah, he does that sometimes at my place too." I asked him where. He said the bedroom corner near the window. I asked which corner. He described the same orientation. His apartment is directly above mine. I tend to not believe in things that I can't measure, but I did buy a nightlight for my room. I'll let you know what happens if Ruckt sleeps over again.
Strange Encounter in Minnesota by Anonymous. My father was a biologist and had worked for the FDA for many years. He later became a reporter for a small-town newspaper. In his travels across the states and abroad, he had seen many amazing things. He was definitely a no-nonsense guy and dismissed anything paranormal. That is until one summer night when he decided to take a quick trip from the house to the gas station about 3 miles from our home. We lived in the sticks and had a few people who lived nearby, but for the most part, everyone was spread out pretty thin. My father left for the store but returned within just a couple of minutes, much too short a time to have made it there and back. He walked into the house and stood there staring at the wall, looking extremely puzzled and nervous. I looked over at him, and I asked what was wrong. I wanted to know whether or not he made it to the store. His response was dead silent. I asked again a couple of minutes later, not breaking my gaze, hoping to figure out what the problem really was. He then began to speak in this low, quiet tone. He said, "I'm not sure what I just witnessed." He then told me about this 2 to 3 foot bipedal humanoid that had crossed the road slowly in the headlights. It wore no clothes, had no anatomical identifiers, but had human-like facial features that were distinguished enough for him to identify that it was extremely angry at the intrusion of his headlights. My dad felt a very real sense of dread from the encounter. We never really talked about it again, but from time to time, it crosses my mind, and I decided to share it here. It was the summer of 1997. Now, I do have other paranormal stories from that area. It seemed like a hotbed for a few years in the mid-90s to the early 2000s. If anyone is interested in hearing more, please let me know.
I Lived in a Haunted House by Purple Appa. I want to start by saying that my story might not be the scariest out there, but this was my experience with the paranormal. I was raised in a Christian family, and still am, so I believe in the afterlife. Growing up in Indonesia, hearing stories about spirits and hauntings was also not uncommon. I also went to a private Catholic school for 12 years, and there were some scary stories about this school. They were common knowledge among the students. All this is to say that I generally believe in the idea of spirits roaming among us, but have never personally had any experience. Until I moved into my new house. In the house that I grew up in, I had a next-door neighbor that I played with a lot. I would play Harvest Moon on his PS2 or watch movies. I spent a lot of time in that house as a kid and had never felt anything paranormal while I was there. During my last year of middle school, 9th grade to be exact, my next door neighbors decided to move and they sold the house to my parents. My dad wanted to expand our home. He wanted to create a separate, smaller, 2-story building for his home office and a guest room on top. After this separate building was finished, my parents decided they wanted to renovate the main house, so all 3 of us moved into the smaller building during the renovation. The place was cozy and bright, and it was small enough for all 3 of us to have our own space. There wasn't anything creepy or scary about it. The walls and furniture were painted white, and there were a lot of windows letting in daylight and the cool breeze. On the 2nd floor, my bedroom was in the room meant to be my dad's home office, and my parents slept in the guest room. Next to the vanity mirror is a staircase leading down to the 1st floor. The TV was placed directly on the side of the stairs and vanity table, so when I sat down to watch TV, my back would be facing the staircase. But every time I sat there, I constantly heard footsteps coming up the stairs. For the first few weeks of living there, I would keep turning my head, thinking my mom was walking up the stairs, but no one was there. I even went to check the air vent, which was in the middle of the stairs, to see if there was anything in there that could be making footstep noises. But there was nothing. It was just an open staircase, and nothing was there to make any noise. let alone noises that would mimic the sound of footsteps. I thought it was all in my head, so I ignored it. Until one day, one of my friends from school came to my house to study, and they heard it too. As we were sitting in the library area of the second floor, I listened to the sound of footsteps coming up the stairs. At that exact moment, we both turned our heads toward the staircase. Just like me, she thought someone was walking up the stairs. We were alone in the house at the time. This became a regular thing that didn't scare me. I felt no hostile feeling from whatever it was, so for the most part, I ignored it. My bedroom was small, cozy, and bright. This is also where my paranormal experience started. I've never had sleep paralysis in my entire life, and haven't had any since, except while I lived in this house. I can't remember when it began, but I would have it so often I'd be scared to go to sleep. The sleep paralysis would go something like this. I would be asleep on my back, and I would suddenly feel that I was awake. I'd be able to see my blanket, my desk, and the chair in front of my bed, but I wouldn't be able to move. I had this feeling that I was going to experience something scary, and I had no control over what would happen. Then I would panic and try my hardest to move or make a sound. I would begin praying the Our Father prayer repeatedly, and slowly the sensation would fade. I would open my eyes and be sweating and stiff from all the tension. There were two incidents in particular that stuck with me. The first was when I felt my spirit rise away from my body. It was a typical weekday night. I closed my eyes and slowly felt my body relaxing and drifting off. For some reason, I was sleeping on my back and staring at the ceiling. The weird thing is, the ceiling started to come closer and closer to my face. I realized it would generally be impossible if I were in a dream state. I even remembered consciously wondering if I'd be able to see the top railing of my curtain. Then I remember turning my head to see, and there it was, the top of my curtain railings, just centimeters from my face. Then I decided to pinch my arm to confirm if I was dreaming. When I did, I felt no pain in my arm, but my head started hurting like crazy. Then I opened my eyes on top of my bed, with a throbbing pain in my head. This second incident felt so much scarier. Again, this night was like any other. I went to bed and drifted off to sleep. Suddenly, the all-too-familiar feeling of sleep paralysis started to creep over me. For a while, I just froze on my back, feeling the fear and tension building. I struggled, trying to release my body and mind from the sensation. All of a sudden, I felt my body drifting downwards. It was as if I was being pulled by something from the bottom left side of my bed. I was being pulled to the floor of my bedroom. Imagine a human-sized doll lying limp on the bed, sliding sideways off. That's exactly how it seemed, except I was that doll. I can still see in my mind's eye the outline of my desk and chair placed directly in front of my bed. I remember my eyes drifting from the chair's backrest to its wheels below as my unmovable body floated to the floor. I had to give way to the force pulling me, too scared to imagine what would happen next. But like clockwork, my brain reminded me to pray and call upon Jesus to save me. After praying multiple times and crying for help from God, I slowly felt the force release me. I woke up scared, stiff, and sore, but grateful that it was over. These were the last of my sleep paralysis experiences in this house. It happened so often that it became a routine that I had to accept. I'm an only child, and during that time, I was in my prime teenage rebellious years. experiencing complications in my relationship with my parents. So I never told them what I was experiencing when it was happening. I told them about it recently, though, and my mom asked me why I never told them. My mom has her own share of paranormal activities, but she isn't the type of person to acknowledge or entertain the idea of paranormal things happening. Even so, she concluded that almost all of our worst fights occurred in that house. We were always irritated and angry, all the time. Sleep deprivation probably didn't help on my part. But I also feel that whatever was in there exasperated all of our bad tendencies. One good thing that came out of this experience was that I learned that I'm weak, and there are a lot of things that are out of my control. I needed God, and He was always there for me, even when I didn't feel it at the time. Looking back, I can see Him working on me, being a better person during those difficult years. For that, I'm incredibly grateful. I also can't 100% say that all of these were caused by spirits or paranormal activity. There could very well be a scientific explanation for all of this. All I can say is that I didn't feel good living in that house, and I am so glad I no longer live there.
A Story from the Forest by Anonymous. I don't remember this story completely, but one day, I was having a conversation with my mom when she randomly brought up that I was able to see spirits as a kid. She asked me, "Do you remember the man you saw in the window?" I told her I didn't. When I said this, she went on, "Well, in the small town we lived in, your nearest neighbor was 10 minutes down the road, besides the two houses that sat behind and across the street from you. You hated the forest and you never went outside far from the house. One day, your brother, sister, and father went to your brother's baseball game and you stayed home with me. I was in the kitchen and you were left alone in the living room, and after some time you started crying. I calmed you down and you said, 'Mommy, there's a man in the window.' But I didn't see anything." When she told me this, I was stunned, because at that moment, I got this image flooding my mind. A tall white man with blondish hair and blue eyes, his hands gripping the top of the window frame. She went on, "I took you to the car and drove you all the way to your brother's game. When we got home, your dad searched outside and through the house, but didn't find anything. Now, my brother also told me I was a weird baby. He said I'd either be happy and loud or angry and completely quiet, with no in between until I got older. He also told me about another time that I saw a man in the bathroom window. The bathroom was on the second floor."
The Canal in My Memory by Meredith. When I was in elementary school, I asked my mom about a family vacation we had taken to Panama. We stood along the rail beside the Great Locks, sunlight glinting off the water. I remembered the tour guide's voice as she explained how the chambers filled and emptied to let boats pass from one ocean to another. I remembered leaning over the edge, watching the water recede, like someone was pulling a bathtub plug from the world itself. Then the fish appeared in my memory, a small silver thing, caught on the wrong side of the gate as the level dropped. I saw it flopping on exposed concrete, helpless, its scales flashing, like a broken signal. I remembered crying quietly, distressed by the senseless death. The memory was so vivid that the humidity clung to me as I told her about it. I could practically smell the wet concrete and hear the groan of the gears. My mom listened, her brow wrinkled at first, and then she started to laugh. "Sweetheart," she said, "you must have watched a TV show about Panama. We never went there. You haven't been out of the country." I stared at her, confused. "But I remember it." She shook her head, still smiling. "Your dad and I went to Panama in 1969, before you were born. Actually, I was pregnant with you at the time." Her words echoed strangely in my mind. Before I was born, pregnant with me. I laid awake that night, thinking about the fish. I could see it too clearly. The iridescent scales. The desperate writhing. These weren't fragments from a TV show. They didn't feel borrowed. They felt remembered.
All right, ask and ye shall receive. As I've said in the past, I don't like to Google things that we have questions about on the podcast because it's fun to hear back from the listeners.
Totally.
Last week it was anvils. We talked about who's using an anvil anymore. What's the reason for the weird pointy part? Well, we did have somebody get back to us. Randa says, farriers, horseshoers use anvils. The round pointy part is used to hammer in the curve of the horseshoe. The flat top and rectangular end that's opposite the pointy end are both used to hammer the steel, flatten the overall shoe, and I've seen the corner edge used to knock extra length off after clipping it. I could be wrong, but I think the rest of the shape has a purpose as well. Enough mass to stay upright and take the abuse while still being light enough to pull on a cart in the old days. Maybe? I like it how it ended in maybe.
All of that just for it to be not a certainty. But you know what? Let's go with it. I think that's the official consensus of anvils. Mystery solved.
Yeah, as far as horseshoes go, it totally makes sense.
Do you like playing horseshoes or cornhole, those sort of things? Shuffleboard?
Yeah, horseshoes, cornhole, balloon fights, volleyball. Yeah, I love those outdoor in the yard activities so much.
I was going to start talking about snooker. We need a good snooker pool hall. You never see snooker out here in America.
Without boring everyone to death, I do want to ask, what's the difference? What's snooker?
Snooker has like those, a bunch of red balls and the table is a lot bigger and the pockets are smaller. It's a lot more technical and some more weird rules to it. But it's super interesting. If anybody likes pool even a little bit, not necessarily playing, but can appreciate the talent, watch some snooker. Check out Rocket Rodney. That guy is a monster. Rodney O'Sullivan.
Yeah, that sounds a bit pornographic. I will check out Rocket Rodney, but I will use Safe Search.
Yeah.
Interesting. Anyway, so, oh yeah, Kelly. They said Utah needs White Castle, you being from Utah. How do you feel about that? And how do you feel about White Castle?
Very neutral. Never tried it, but I wouldn't be opposed to doing so. I'm happy with In-N-Out or just eating healthier at home.
Yeah, absolutely. It can't get any better than In-N-Out, in my opinion.
Well, Five Guys is up there.
Five Guys is good when you want a big, sloppy, fat burger.
Yeah, if I'm going to eat even a little bit reckless, I need it big, fat, and sloppy.
I need to give them another shot. As far as White Castle goes, I've only tried the frozen White Castle burgers, which are disgusting unless you're in your 20s and you're drunk.
Yeah.
I'm sure the restaurant tastes a lot better.
So it looks like Jules Hose ID commented on episode 224 about Mr. Bojangles. There's a song by the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and apparently it's a great song. We'll have to check it out.
I guess I just had completely forgotten about that song. It just was erased from my mind. But the moment that I started playing it, I was like, oh no, I know this song. I remember this. It's a really good song, and I like the Dirt Band. They're good.
I was going to say it's probably what we were thinking of when we were thinking about Mr. Bojangles and didn't make that connection. I didn't listen to the song yet, but I'm sure I'll recognize it once I play it.
Yeah, when we're done with this, I want to see your reaction when you play it. Yeah, you'll know right away.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a little one-word reference to Bruce Lee's Enter the Dragon when he's on the boat. What's your style? Yeah. You can call it the art of fighting without fighting. Blah, blah, blah. We can take this bow. Okay. Yeah. You know how it goes.
Yeah. Ham Hands Bill says, another good episode, guys. I also like your banter. In the age of AI, it's nice to know real people with real emotions and comedic chops are still doing podcasts.
Hey.
I don't know about comedic chops.
Depends who you ask.
I guess. We're pretty tame here. Every show Andrew touches is gold, and Brandon is nothing to sneeze at either.
Appreciate that. There are some other bodily functions, so keep looking.
Yeah. I like those turn of phrase things, like nothing to sneeze at. I was thinking of one the other day when my dad said, there's something to be said about whatever. I don't even know what it was. And I was like, what is it? What is there to be said, Dad? What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
Just say it. Just say the thing that needs to be said. Leaving other people in suspense to fill in the blanks. Come on, don't do that, Poppy.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to a story here. I just want to jump right into my Ladakhi Mountains story.
Good place. Good place.
Yeah, we kind of went all over the world here. And this one I really liked because it highlighted one of the things that I love about the show, and that's being able to learn like bits of knowledge, like geography, which is admittedly one of my worst subjects. I'm terrible with geography. I don't know why. It never clicked with me.
It might just not interest you. Not necessarily a bad thing. You know, I'm sure you know where England is, you know, like it's like whatever.
Yeah. Like I know all the obvious ones, the easy ones, but like I had to look up where Ladakh would be. I had no idea.
Unless it is a country, I'm pretty sure that's like a state within that region. Yeah, it's a union territory administered by India.
Yeah.
So I think you're in the clear there. No shame.
Okay, fair enough. The best way, I think, to learn stuff, at least for my brain, is through entertainment. And I thought of this when I read through the Panama Canal story. Because I learned about the Panama Canal through Animaniacs. In fact, I had a tape, I think it was called Travelin' Maniacs. The Panama Canal song, it's really interesting. It's like, got a tramp steamer, my ship's called Hal, 40 miles on the Panama Canal.
Hey.
And I always thought that Panama Canal was this 40-mile river or canal, you know what I mean? But I guess it's like 51 miles, so they got that fact wrong. So I'm wondering how many facts I learned from the songs from Animaniacs that are completely wrong. I'm nervous.
Ooh, yeah, that's quite the scandal.
I did learn the names of all of the countries. I just don't know where they're at because I know that Yakko's World song that names every single country.
Yeah, I remember that one. I think in that case, if you still know all the countries, I think you're pretty solid.
Yeah, I can name them all. I just don't know where the hell they're at.
Now just learn some fun facts about each of them and I think you'll be good.
Yeah, good point, yeah.
Well, on that note, did the Animaniacs teach you anything about wolves by chance?
So, from what I've read, there are wolves in the Himalayas, but they don't look anything like what the author described. They do have like a couple of cryptids in the area, but none of them really track with this dog thing either. They have like the Yeti, which is obviously the most popular. And then something called the, I'm probably saying it wrong, Bilongpas. It's basically their version of like small humanoid beings, like, you know.
Machine elves.
The little people that people see. Yeah, machine elves. Yeah. So I have no idea what this thing could be. But when they said, when it looked at them, it had like a human type face. That really creeped me out because I've seen some pictures of dogs that have almost human like looking faces that are pretty creepy.
Yeah. And that area is just so remote. If anything, maybe these sightings could be even more pure and not influenced by culture and everything.
Good point. Yeah. I would like to go into your Panama Canal story because I found this one to be interesting.
I like it a lot, too. We've kind of talked about stuff like this before as far as memories that could be real, could be false. But for this one, it makes me wonder if the idea of fetal consciousness is a thing. I know it's been discussed for decades, and we still haven't really landed anywhere solid about it. But the mom was also pretty early in pregnancy. So I wonder how Meredith's experience may have even occurred, you know, like,
yeah,
what was the state of her soul or herself or whatever to have that vivid memory. And why the fish specifically out of that entire trip, everything that happened in Panama, that's what stuck with her. So maybe there's something to say about her empathy now, her awareness of things around her. So yeah, it's a lot to really unpack.
Yeah, when I thought about this one after reading it, my opinion was maybe they just inherited a memory from their mother. Not that they were aware in the womb during it happening,
mm-hmm.
but it might just be a memory that somehow they inherited. Who knows? I don't know. That's just one theory I have.
Yeah, no, that's fair. It's kind of like reading somebody else's diary and thinking it's your own, and it becomes like a false memory of, oh, hey, yeah, that's totally me. Then you realize after the fact, wait a minute, that wasn't my diary. Why did that look like my handwriting? Why do I remember that?
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, she was a baby. So I don't, not even a baby, a fetus. So who knows? Or whatever the stages are of pregnancy. But yeah, you get it.
Yeah, totally. Kind of makes me think about how like compulsive liars end up just believing their lies because they lie so much and they stick to their lies.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing. Like they convinced themselves that it was their memory.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe their mom told them the story about being at the Panama Canal and the fish flopping or whatever. And they just somehow, I don't know, maybe they overheard their mom talking about it one time and it just planted itself into their brain and became their memory. There's a lot of different explanations to this one, but
it's so vivid though. That's the thing. That's what's so weird about
it. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's so vivid that it doesn't make sense. And I'm trying to make sense of it, but it doesn't make sense in any other way.
And Meredith is not a liar. I'm just assuming, but she could be, but I doubt it. Great story.
Yeah. So I used to have this dream about this smiling man at my window. I would wake up in the middle of the night and he'd just be like looking in my window, smiling at me. He kind of looked almost like a Dracula type character.
Ooh.
It really scared me of windows in general at night when it's dark outside. Or, you know.
Oh, windows. Okay. I was going to say, are you a Linux guy? What's going on?
So I switched to Linux. Yeah.
Yeah. There's that comedic spunk for you.
Yeah. So whenever there's no curtains over the windows at night, I have a hard time actually looking at them because I'm scared I'm going to see somebody looking back at me because it was such a scary nightmare that recurred so many times. So anything that has to do with a creep looking through a window always freaks me out.
Yeah, understandable. Very let's not meet.
This was actually going to be a let's not meet story until I got to the part where the man was seen again in the second story bathroom window.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, no, wait, this is the supernatural part.
Yeah, that meets some sort of threshold.
The description, it kind of reminded me of those Nordic aliens or what people call the tall whites, which...
It's such a weird name.
Yeah, I hate that term.
Yeah, at least grays doesn't seem to be so pointed.
Yeah. We've heard about those types of encounters with ETs. Tall, pale, blonde, with blue eyes. It pretty much just matched exactly what these tall whites or Nordic aliens could be.
Yeah, definitely on the nose.
I appreciate that the mom also just wanted to get out of there. You know, she didn't even investigate, basically just noped out of there.
Yep.
As soon as her kid told her, hey, I just saw this person looking at me through the window. And it makes me wonder how many times these paranormal sightings happened with this kid. Like how many times he's described this kind of thing to the mom leading up to this event, to the point where she had to have believed him. Otherwise, why would she just put him in the car and get him out of there, you know?
Yeah, the whole thing, it sounds kind of like the Panama Canal story, almost like it's told through somebody else's memory. I don't know if
That's basically it. I don't know if you missed that part, but actually what the author said was they didn't remember this. This was something that their mom told them about that happened. And then it came flooding back. They had blocked this out.
So that external influence or something.
Mm-hmm. Weird synchronicities with our stories, man.
Yeah, and the whole thing was this... It was all full of extremes, no sort of middle ground. So I think there was some sort of connection to everything.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, let's talk a little bit about the haunted house submission by Purple Appa. That's an interesting nickname that they chose to go with. I don't remember what that's from. It's really bothering me. Does that ring a bell to you?
Appa is a fictional character from the Nickelodeon animated television series Avatar. That's probably what they're referencing.
That was it. Yep. I was looking for the email and that was it. Yep. Great research there.
Thanks, Google.
All right, mystery solved. On to the haunted house story. Wow, haven't heard a haunted house story in I don't know, a week. But
for a second, I was like, where are you going with this?
Yeah. Yeah, that deadpan humor. Gotta love it. I guess the craziest thing, obviously, the footsteps being heard by other people. Cool, yeah. Awesome. But floating toward the ceiling and being dragged off the bed. Pretty classic experiences with sleep paralysis, even though oftentimes people don't necessarily feel being physically moved, like there's that pressure on the chest. But
yeah,
there's been at least one story where I do recall feeling pulled. And I know, like, we've all experienced, as you're falling asleep, you like suddenly jolt awake and it feels like you're mm-hmm. falling.
Yeah.
But this sounded a little bit different than that.
Yeah, it does sound a little bit different than that. And it makes me think that they may be having some kind of astral projection experience.
Oh,
and
yeah.
This could be an entity from an astral realm pulling mm-hmm. them. Because this is something that happened with Robert Monroe in some of his books. He like wrestled with this weird panther type thing that was that showed up in the astral realm in his bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this isn't something that's too far off base with astral projection and out-of-body experiences. I think that might actually be what they're experiencing. And maybe this is the bridge from what, you know, astral projection is and ghosts. They exist in that astral realm, and that's how they interact with us.
Yeah, it feels like being a human. I swear this has to have been a theory that's been presented before, but we're basically 2D entities in a 3D environment, but we can only perceive the two-dimensional. Metaphorically, we're basically living life through a 2D lens and haven't fully ascended to the full 3D.
Yeah, and I've learned about this recently, and I don't even know if this is true. I just heard somebody talking about it. I think it was on a YouTube channel.
No, it's true.
It could be true, it could be false, but the fact that ants aren't even aware of us, they can't see the lights and the colors of us somehow. I don't know. Their eyes just can't perceive us. They don't know that we exist.
Maybe they can only see like things of a certain size, or like their depth is way off, so we're just a huge blur.
Well, okay, so I had to look it up. They have low-resolution compound eyes, primarily detect movement and light rather than forming detailed images. Instead of seeing a person, ants likely perceive humans as a mass or a blurry moving environment. Like, their brains just can't figure it out that we're a thing, you know what I mean?
They got that really low bit rate, 144p going on.
Mm-hmm.
At least they're really strong for their size, relative strength. Crazy.
Yeah, that's wild. I really liked the ant from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
It's been a while. I don't want to make up a false memory, so I'm not going to smile and nod, but I swear that stirred something up.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for not humoring me.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we cover a lot of ground here. I'm sure plenty of you are going to have answers to our questions, or you're going to correct us because we got something wrong. I was sweating there with the ant thing. I still feel like I got it wrong. But anyway, send in your questions, comments, and stories to stories@oddtrails.com. You can always leave a comment on Spotify or join our Discord and chat in the Discord channel for Odd Trails. The link will be in the show notes. And sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/oddtrails if you want to get ad-free versions of all of our episodes at a higher bitrate so you're not listening to it like an ant. And be sure to check out the new episodes of my other podcasts like Let's Not Meet and the Old Time Radiocast. We'll see you guys next week. Everybody, stay safe.
Peace out.
The ghouls disturb you, darling.